okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 156 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And with me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
G'day, mate. Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. Actually, yeah. I'm pretty excited.
Oh, really?
I probably shouldn't sell you this, but arriving in the mail today was my copy of Adobe Master Collection CS5.
So I hate you.
Sorry. I knew I shouldn't have said it. As soon as I started down that path, I was like, no.
Yeah. No. Just Skype a little bit about it. So have you installed it yet?
No.
Okay.
Because I've still got the beta installed on my machine, and I'll need to uninstall that before I put the real one on. So.
So when do I get mine?
I don't know.
But when are you going to get it for me?
I've put you in touch with the people at Adobe.
Have you?
You can fight your own fight.
Nice guy. This is the guy I have to do podcasts with, people. All right? He comes across as Bruce Williams, all-around nice guy. But when it really boils down to it, you know, he just loves honestly. You know, don't you hate these people who hang off you, right, and become famous on your back, you know, through, like, popular podcasts? And then they get these really cool gigs. You know, honestly, you'd be nothing without me, Bruce.
I hate that. That happens to me all the time.
You hate it when people do that? The fact that you got into Adobe all on your own has nothing to do with it. I don't mind saying. You know.
Hey, while we're ragging on people, we got to give Dave Clark a bit of a hammering.
Oh, yeah.
For those who don't know, Dave Clark is one of our listeners from Tasmania, and he admitted openly on Facebook in a status message that he fell asleep last night while listening to Shutters Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Disgraceful.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing, I mean, look, admittedly, one of his heads might have been awake. I'm not really sure. You know, it one of the, you know, because the whole Tasmanian thing, you know, you got to be an Aussie to understand that one, folks.
Yeah.
But Dave, seriously, mate, are we that boring that you fall asleep listening to Shutters Inc.? Maybe we have to up the standard of our podcast a little bit.
Apparently.
Are we crapping on too much, essentially?
Maybe that's it.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Dave, you know, we are sorry that we bored you into narcoleptic, complete, you know, and utter unconsciousness, you know, comatose, the comatose podcast. But really, did you have to make a status update about it? Tell the whole world our podcasts are boring, why don't you?
Dear, so how's your week been? You've been busy.
I have been very busy. Glenn and I are just running this creative photo workshops thing, and we've planned too many things to happen all at once.
Right.
And and then of course we've got the Digital Life Expo coming up, which we'll be catching up with in person.
Yes.
And we should do a podcast from there. I reckon that would be awesome.
Yep.
But we'll be catching up hopefully there. But in the meantime, Glenn and I got back from Sydney up your neck of the woods on late Monday night. We got back midday Tuesday. What am I talking about?
Yep.
See, it's so crazy. I don't even know where I'm going or what I'm doing. Essentially, we had the incredible opportunity to photograph the cast of Wicked in Sydney.
Nice.
Doing very, very well. And it was a competition that the ANZ Bank ran with Creative Photo Workshops to find an official photographer, someone who could come and photograph a particular one-off performance of the cast of Wicked doing another show as a one-off performance for what's the Rob Guest Endowment Fund, which is a sort of a charity run, you know, or an endowment fund, I suppose, for Rob Guest, who's a very well-known Australian theatrical performer. Mm-hmm. Who passed a couple of years ago. So we ran this competition. We found our winner, Mark Avellino, and hopefully you're listening to this, Mark, because you were a great choice of winner, man. You were really fantastic. It was great having you along and having you be the official photographer for that shoot. Essentially what happened, Bruce, was that what the event was is that in order for a cast, apparently, to retain its level of interest, its level of creativity, its spontaneity. While they're performing one show, they actually rehearse another.
Wow.
So I've heard. Now, if you are a professional and you're in the industry, please correct me, but that is what I basically heard took place in this case. So you can imagine you're doing 8 performances or whatever a week of this 2-3 hour, you know, show like Wicked, mm-hmm. and at the same time you're, you know, using the rest of your time to practice and learn an entirely new show. Well, the show that they put on was called Into the Woods, and it's a Stephen Sondheim musical.
Okay.
And essentially, to be honest, what the story is that they take all the old fairy tales, Red Riding Hood, Cinderella, Jack and the Beanstalk, and a couple of others, and they combine them all into one story. The moral, it's quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah.
The moral of which is, be careful of what you wish for. You might just get it, and it might turn out to be the thing you actually don't want.
Right.
You know, make sure you know what you want before you wish it, because you just might get what you wish, mm-hmm. and things might not turn out the way you expected. And there's a whole bunch of, you know, smaller moral lessons within this musical, but the music is great. I really enjoyed the songs within it, and the cast are just talent personified. Their vocal range, their performance, their acting was just spectacular. So Glyn and I and Mark, we were there to photograph the dress rehearsal, and then we had to photograph a bit of a celebrity do beforehand, you know, where they all stand around with their horses, duvers, and champagne.
Yep.
And, you know, take photographs. So we had to teach Mark to, you know, be in that environment, step out of himself, you know, get a slightly larger than life personality and walk up to people and break up their little groups of conversation and ask them to, you know, to if they could be photographed, because these are relatively well-known Australians and, you know, they wanted, you know, the ANZ Bank wanted publicity photographs. So there's all this kind of stuff going on. And then we stayed to photograph and, you know, the actual performance, and then went back to the after party with all the cast. So yeah, it was really, really big. But for Mark, it was a one-off, because, you know, he got to basically see him, you know, or sample the life of a professional photographer in that particular arena for the day. It was a long day, and so he learned a few things. That A, the life of a professional photographer, while diverse and exciting at times, is also just plain hard work too. And that, you know, there's more to photography than just being able to point a camera and know what it does, but that it actually, there are aspects of your personality which are very important.
Yep.
And, you know, he had that put to the test. And may I say that he rose to the challenge on every occasion, just absolutely brilliantly. Glyn and I could not have been more happy with our choice of winner than Mark Avellino. So,
awesome.
Mark, if you are listening to this, well done, mate. Already your photographs are being very much appreciated by the ANZ Bank. And it looks like you learned very, very quickly from our brief tuition sessions there. Well done. So, yeah, that's essentially what's going on. Tomorrow I fly out for Queensland with Glyn, and we're doing 2 days of workshops in Brisbane and the Gold Coast, where Surfers Paradise is. That's for, you know, people who aren't in Australia, just in case they've heard of Surfers Paradise. That's where we're heading, just to run 4 days of workshops and a couple of emerging nymph shoots as well. So,
wow.
Oh, then we come back, and then we've got to prepare for the Digital Life Expo, which we're running a 6x19 meter stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, Kodak let the cat out of the bag.
I saw that.
Yep, officially.
Yep.
To let everyone know that I am off to South Africa as their representative to both video and photograph for them while the World Cup soccer is on.
So I just want to clarify, is this Kodak Australia or Kodak Worldwide?
Well, it's Kodak Worldwide. There are apparently 9 people who have been chosen from around the world. I'm honored to be one of them. In other countries, they ran a competition. In Australia, they didn't run a competition. They just rang me up and asked me to do it, which was really great.
Wow.
I must admit, that sort of blows me away just a little bit.
I'm
very, very honored to have, you know, they basically knew who they wanted and didn't bother finding. They just rang me up. And that's it's a little overwhelming, I have to admit, but I'm really excited about it. And our job basically is to go to South Africa for a few days, about 4 or 5 days, and just capture the fever of the World Cup that's there. We get to go to the Germany-Australia game, or at least I do. I'm not sure about the others. Maybe they will go to different games, or if there are different games there. No, that's the only one, isn't it? Australia versus Germany, right, which will be very interesting for me because I live in Australia. I'm a resident of Australia, but I am a German citizen, and I was born there. So I still travel on the passport. So I don't know who I'm going to be, you know, I can see myself on one hand when
you'll Germany end up like Pavlov's dog by the end of it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Germany will score a goal, and I'll go wunderbar, ausgezeichnet. And then, of course, you know, the Aussies will score a goal, and go, oh, you bloody ripper! Yeah,
Aussie, mate. Aussie,
oi, 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 oi. Yeah. So, you know, I'll just be a little bit ambivalent there. I you know, won't know whether to scratch my watch or wind my backside.
Yeah. You know? So fantastic.
So yeah, that's and then yeah, after that we go. I finish in South Africa, mm-hmm. I fly home, and then the day after I get back on a plane to LA and Las Vegas for a few days, well, about a week and a half of running workshops there. Then I come home, and I think probably then I'll die.
Why are you even coming home? Like from South Africa, why don't you just go across the Atlantic and be done with it?
A matter of money, to be quite honest with you. Kodak took care of the airfares, and it was actually going to cost us as a company, Creative Photo Workshops, about $2,500 more by if I was going from South Africa to LA than if I was then coming home to Melbourne and then going, you know, because the way that apparently a return ticket is proportionately, you know, less expensive than a one way.
Okay.
So, and it would have been a one, if I had gone to South Africa from Melbourne and then from Johannesburg
LA.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know the logic, but it just wasn't going to work out.
What?
Yeah.
Because you can pick up a round the world ticket for about $2,500 these days.
Yeah, I know. I know. But the way that the travel agents who are booking this through Kodak were working it meant that, yeah, I couldn't do it any other way.
How bizarre.
I know, it was a little bizarre, but I'm sure that Kodak have their reasons, but the difference in airfare whether I came home or went to LA and then came home was something like €1,000.
Wow.
Wow,
that's crazy.
Of course, I still had to pay for a fare back from LA.
Yeah.
So that's another $1,000 as well. So. Yeah. You know, it was just crazy. So, and I don't think Kodak were going to relinquish, you know, their travel department and allow us to organize it.
No.
I probably could have done exactly what you said, but they were organizing the travel and I basically just take it as it comes.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not complaining, man. You know, I mean, I'll, you know, it gets a little crazy sometimes when you start complaining. I'll be fine. I'll just sleep overnight and go back to the airport and catch another plane.
I was going to say, your body clock's not going to know which way it's pointing.
Yeah.
By the time you get to LA,
yeah,
you'll be going, yeah, what month is it?
Yeah. Yes. If ever there was the experience of a time machine, I reckon I'll be finding myself.
Yeah.
So basically, that's my month or so ahead. Yeah, it's it's quite incredible. I'm looking forward to July and August because I hopefully will not be, you know, running around like a headless chook. You know, it's interesting. I was talking about the moral of that story, you know, of Into the Woods, this Stephen Sondheim show. And yeah, be careful what you wish for. You might get it. Crazy.
Yeah, right.
It's a good life. It is a good life, but it does get a little crazy sometimes.
Now, speaking of the craziness of your workshops, I noticed through the week that you have now taken delivery of your FlashWave triggers.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
I love them. I think they're really good.
Yeah.
There are some aspects of them that are actually a little bit better than Pocket Wizards, such as I mentioned in my blog, the receiver has a hot shoe attachment, which a Pocket Wizard doesn't.
Yeah.
So you can actually, you know, slide it onto the hot shoe of a flash. Now, if you've bought a couple of cheap strobist flash guns off eBay, often they won't have PC connections.
Yep.
So you've got to buy the flash, then you go to connect the Pocket Wizard to it, and you haven't got a little PC input to, you know, to connect the cord. So then you have to buy an adapter that goes from the hot shoe to create a PC input. Then you attach your Pocket Wizard to it. It's all very convoluted.
Yeah, right.
But receiver on the FlashWave, on the FlashWave 3, has both PC input
and hot shoe. Nice.
The only thing with the FlashWave that we've got to learn to adapt is that it has a tripod socket on the bottom. It would have been great if it had the ability to be put on a lighting stand. But hey, if that's not a criticism, it's just a, you know.
But again, isn't there an adapter thread that you can get that?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I could just get an adapter thread that puts, or you know, jerry-rig the thing up and put it on a lighting stand. But, I mean, it does have a PC connection, so even if I had to resort to, you know, using it as I would a Pocket Wizard, it's still as, you know, it's as reliable. These things, you know, we fired it off at 70 meters, and it was fine.
Wow.
We didn't walk, take it any further. We thought that would be enough. 70 meters. So, and it fires both your flash, and if you want to buy the cord for it, it will also remotely trigger your camera as well, just like Pocket Wizard.
Nice.
And the construction of them is very good. And if you buy two of them here in Australia, you get the trigger and the receiver for about $249.
Yep.
And that won't even buy you one Pocket Wizard.
Yeah.
You know, and you need two Pocket Wizards, one to receive, one to trigger. So for us, we're you know, for our workshops, it's just a practical choice. And I must admit, we were able to hand out, you know, we handed out, I think, a, you know, 12 triggers, and you know, the other day at the workshop, and everybody was just standing around banging away on their remote on the flash that was attached to their camera, and they all had a great time, you know.
Awesome.
On our photography workshop. So yeah, they are fantastic. At this stage in Australia, you can buy the FlashWave 3s from Michael's Camera Store in Melbourne,
mm-hmm.
and Photo Continental in Brisbane, but I'm not sure of any Sydney outlets yet, but I'll keep you posted.
Well, I as I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, the guys at Dragon Image here in Sydney had some.
Right.
But the guy that I spoke to said he was having trouble keeping them on the shelf because as soon as they were appearing, they were disappearing.
Right.
You know, as soon as he was getting them, other people were buying them, and yeah.
Yeah, I know Michael's had the same thing happen, so they're no doubt going to have to order some more. But they are definitely better than the Chinese, you know, cactus you know, triggers, even better than the V4s, which we've talked about on this podcast.
Yep.
They are better than the V4s. We had a dozen people firing away on our flash workshop on Saturday, and not one of them missed a shot, except when the flash hadn't recharged in time and they were a little bit eager.
I was just going to ask you that. Were you running off just double A's on the flash gun, or?
Well, I used the Flash Pro, the battery-powered flash head that I bought.
Right.
Which they were all connected to, and I had that wound down to about an eighth power. So the thing can fire. That thing is awesome for how many flashes it can get out of one battery. It's really very cool.
Right.
So they were all connected to this one flash, and they were, because we had one setup going, and I was showing them how to light and you know, meter for this one particular scene. So we had 12 people-ish, you know, photographing this one scene, not all at the same time, but they would come in, take their turn, maybe two or three at a time. And the only time that they ever missed a shot was not because the flash didn't trigger, but just that the flash wave didn't trigger, but that the, you know, my this little flash head, the Flash Pro that I bought from Dragon Image, which is a great thing for strobist work, that it hadn't charged in time. They just, you know, two or three people were firing it at the same time, and that was all it was.
And admittedly, that's a pretty extreme situation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But the trigger and receivers themselves did not miss a shot.
Nice.
Which, you know, for the price and everything, is pretty darn good, really.
Mm.
No, we're very, very impressed with them. Very, very impressed.
Fantastic.
So, you know, if you are looking for a good quality remote trigger and receiving device that's not Pocket Wizard, the FlashWave 3s would definitely be one that I'd recommend. Glenn and I came across them when we were in Anaheim at the expo.
Yep.
We looked at a lot of triggers and receivers. This one immediately caught our eye because it was well built. It really is. It's quite well built.
Yeah.
Very quality. You hold it in your hand, it's heavy, you know, it's the antenna on it is flexible and strong. You know, it's nicely put together. And then we wanted to test it out, so you know, on flashes, and when we did that, yeah, it was our choice. Then we just made sure that somebody was going to import it into this country, mm-hmm. which then began. And we now have them in our hot little hands and ready to use for workshops. So let me know if you've got them. Let me know what you think. If you're listening out there and you've got some, or as a result of this podcast, you go out and buy some, even more so, let us know and let us know what you think of them. They are from, if you're running a workshop, that's probably the ultimate test, really, of a, because you've got all these people firing away and confusing the issue. But nope, not one shot, not one image missed as a result of the trigger or the receiver. So let us know if you've got them and let us know what you think.
Now, just earlier today, as much as we all love Shutters Inc., let's be honest.
Yeah.
We do, but let's be honest. Most of us do read other photography blogs as well.
Really?
Myself included.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And one of the things that I saw today on the Digital Photography School blog was 7 tips to using your tripod.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think, how hard can it be?
Right? Yeah, sort of.
But as I got to reading this, I thought, you know what? This is really good advice and worth sharing. So full credit to digitalphotographyschool.com for this content. I don't want anyone to think that I just stole it and didn't give credit. But I thought it was worth sharing. Yeah. So the first point was find your composition, first and mm-hmm. foremost. They said, since it takes a good amount of time to set up a tripod, it's a good idea to find your composition first and then set up the tripod rather than trying to do it the other way around, which I thought, yep, that makes perfect sense, because once you've got it...
It's funny how simple and sensible it is when you actually read it and go, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because, once you've got the camera on the tripod, it then becomes quite cumbersome to relocate... to get your composition right. So
yeah.
So that
and
was
you could find that it actually blocks your thought process. If you're floating around with a camera in hand, you go, you can elevate yourself, you can lower yourself, you can go to the left, you can go to the right, you can really work the landscape. Especially, if you are shooting landscape, and this is what we found this is something that I found when I was doing landscape lessons in New Zealand, that, once you're set on the tripod, it can actually put you off, moving, because it's a bit, I'm not going to be bothered lowering the leg, But if you've set it up pretty much as you saw it through the viewfinder when you had the camera free held, held in hand, then, you're going to be much closer to the shot. If you're feeling a little tired or a little bit lazy or your tripod's a mongrel of a thing to work with, and some are, then that is a really good piece of advice. Compose first, then set up your tripod.
Yeah. So number 2, point one of the tripod legs toward your subject. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is because once you've pointed one leg at the subject, the other 2 legs are at 60 degrees either side of where you're standing behind the tripod, rather than having one of the legs right in between you and your camera, which again I thought was great advice. And You will find, or at least I've certainly found with my man Frodo, that it actually there's kind of one leg that is sort of the obvious leg to go forward because of the way the head lines up on the top of the tripod. Do you find that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I would only disagree with this on one point, and that is if you are you're shooting with a very wide lens and you're using a sweeping foreground perspective. Like if you're shooting with a 14 mil or even a 20 mil, I've sometimes gone to look at my landscape photo later. If you're, say, working in dim morning light and you can't actually see a lot through the viewfinder, you're just trying your best.
Yep.
Yeah, I've found the corner of a little bit of a tripod leg in the bottom corner of my photograph a couple of times.
I can totally see how that would happen. Yep.
Yeah, that would be the only time that I would disagree with point number 2. You got to be very careful that if you're using a very wide lens and you're pointing down, which you should do in a landscape with a wide-angle lens, that you might get the leg in the photograph. That would be the only concern or the caveat that I would say to point number 2.
Yeah. All right, number 3, keep the center post vertical and perpendicular to the ground. This ensures that the weight of your camera is evenly distributed to all 3 legs. Again, seems like, should be common sense, but sometimes we don't follow it.
True.
Number four, avoid extending the center post.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with this as well, you know, that when you raise the center stem of the tripod, you take away from that low center of gravity that you've got when the camera is right down and sitting right on the top of the three legs.
Yes.
You know, the moment you raise it up, you raise the center of gravity, which makes the tripod less stable.
I have a Velbon carbon fiber tripod, the 730, and I absolutely love this tripod, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
It's tall, it's lightweight, it's sturdy, it's strong, but it had a long center column that you could, but it gave you the option to unscrew it.
Okay.
So and shorten the center column. So I've unscrewed the center column, you know, one segment of it, and basically put it away. A lot of landscape photographers will just either saw it if it doesn't give you the option to unscrew it. You know, you have like a segmented center column, and you can actually unscrew some of them and shorten them. They sort of, you know, like a I don't know. I'm trying to think of like something else where, you know, you get pipes that screw into one another.
Telescopic.
Yeah, it's sort of like that, but except that it's bits that screw in. They don't actually extend. It's just like, you know, screwing another bit on top inside the previous pipe. So let's say, imagine you have the center column. Well, it's segmented. You've got the short bit that comes through the head and through where the legs meet and out the bottom 3 or 4 inches. And then and then screwed into that is a further extension of that same column. You know, if in case you wanted to extend it. Well, I've just, unscrewed it and thrown it away because I'm never going to use it. You know, it is absolutely right. And the thing is, when you're buying a tripod, make sure that it comes up to your, you know, say your chin or something like that.
Yeah.
Without extending the center column.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people will buy a tripod, you know, and go, it comes up to my eyes. Yeah, but the thing is, you know, the center column is, you know, 50% of its height, and that is extremely unstable. So don't even worry about the center column, would be my advice. Just pretend it doesn't even have one, and if it does, you know, shorten it, saw it off, unscrew it, do whatever, because it's very rare that you're actually going to want to use it if you work your tripod correctly.
That is a good point, actually, because my tripod does fall into that category where if I want it at eye height, I do need to extend the center column.
Which tripod do you have?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't know the model of it.
It's the Manfrotto. Is it the 190?
I think it's the 190.
Right, yeah. Which is a nice little tripod, but it's probably a bit short.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
Yeah.
But I like about it, like just coming back to what you were talking about, the extendable center column, is that the great thing about the 190 is that it has a center column that is removable, and you can then take the whichever head you are using, which in my case is a ball head, you can take that off the center column and then mount the head directly to the top of the tripod without the center column being anywhere in the picture.
Yeah.
And the great thing then is that, and I'm not sure how many other tripods other than Manfrotto do this, but the Manfrottos allow you to push these little clips at the top. They're like a little ratchet designed clip at the top of the leg that allows you to then extend the angle of the legs outward to the point where the apex, where all three legs meet, drops down to only a couple of inches off the ground. And you can have these legs that stick out for, you know, a meter and a half in three directions, but the top of your tripod's only a couple of inches off the ground.
Yeah.
Because you've taken the center column out of it. And I do love that design of it. When you do want to get close to the ground, but you need the stability of the tripod, that is just gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like being able to do that.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. And that would be the only way that you'd use the center column. seriously, a few inches above the head, above the apex, fine, you know, but to crank that thing up, you know, to its full is just not a good idea. Mm. Buy the right tripod in the first place. Buy one that is nice and tall. And if you can afford it, of course, a nice carbon fiber is great. But at least, you know, but they're expensive, but they're so lightweight and so sturdy. But, buy one that's nice and tall. You're going to have to go out and get one of these these carbon. I'll show it to you when you come down. It's
gorgeous. Awesome. Well, mine was a birthday present, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, yeah. The person who bought it for you thinks you're shorter than you are, then.
No, she didn't.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
All right, number five. Use.
See, there's such a line there, and I'm just thinking of you.
Use an L bracket for short lenses. Mm-hmm. The L bracket is a special kind of plate that attaches to the camera, or attaches the camera to the tripod head, shaped like an L, and allows you to mount the camera in portrait orientation while keeping the body of the camera centered over the top of the tripod rather than hanging off to the side.
Yep.
Yeah, I will admit I'd never actually seen one of these until I read.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
Oh, they're cool. Yeah. They're cool. For you as a panorama photographer, unless you had the, you know, all the panorama gear, it would
be good, yeah.
But Mike Holman used one of these, has one of these permanently attached to his camera, and used it in New Zealand. And yeah, for the landscape photographer who uses his tripod all the time, and if you love a vertical landscape, now I shoot most of my landscapes vertical.
Yep.
I don't shoot them in what's called landscape mode, horizontal, because I think it's nowhere near as exciting as a sweeping foreground, which I prefer to be vertical.
Sure.
So if I was going to be a landscape photographer, I'd definitely get, you know, one of these L brackets.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number six, use a tripod collar for long lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Again, should be fairly self-explanatory. The idea of the collar is that when you are shooting with a longer lens, like a 70 to 200 or, you know, a 300 mil 2.8, it moves the center of gravity to where the collar is, which is halfway along the length of the lens, rather than having everything pivoting from the body of the camera and all of this massive weight hanging out the front and trying to make the camera pivot. You know, that's obviously a bigger issue if you are trying to shoot in a portrait orientation rather than a landscape. But even in landscape mode, I can imagine it would still be an issue.
I've seen tripods hit the dirt because of that reason.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Ouch. You put a big 70 to 200 2.8 on there or something, and if the tripod's not, you know, a sturdy tripod, a gust of wind gets it, somebody slightly knocks it, or it's, you know, just not a big enough tripod to handle that lens, you can have a lens going, you know,
bang, face first into the ground.
Face first into the dirt. And, you know, it happened on the New Zealand trip.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. No damage done, but nearly. Yeah. Nearly went into the lake.
Oh,
you know? Plunk. Lens forward. So you've got to be, that. Don't underestimate that. So, A, yes, buy a big enough tripod. We can't, really, seriously, if you're going to buy a tripod, you know, I couldn't tell you how many people who have turned up at workshops or with whom I photographed, and they've gone out and they've spent, you know, I don't know, $69 on a tripod or something. Thinking, well, what do I need? I only need three legs, you know, and they're sturdy enough, only to find that the thing drives them absolutely mad.
Yeah.
Because it's just a mongrel of a thing to work with. And it has, you know, no sturdiness to it. It's, you know, it's about as stable as a South American government. So buy a decent tripod. Big, tall, try not to be heavy, but there's no point having a tripod unless the thing actually holds the camera with whatever lens you're going to put on there. But absolutely on the tripod collar. Now, some lenses won't accept the tripod collar. Usually they're older ones. Like, for instance, the my old Nikon's 70 or 80 to 200 2.8, you couldn't put a tripod collar on the thing because it's a push-pull zoom.
Oh, right.
It was a heavy lens, so it was an issue that I had to cope with if I wanted to use the lens on a tripod.
Yeah, right. Wow. But,
yeah. Anyway.
Okay, and finally, point number seven, which has kind of been addressed through some of these last couple of points, is hang your camera bag or some other heavy object from the center column for extra stability. Now, obviously, this is paramount if you're shooting outdoors where it could be windy or, you know, you're knee-deep in the ocean and you've got waves, you know, buffeting against your tripod or whatever. So, you know, have something that you can hang off the center column to give it that extra weight and stability.
Yeah. A lot of tripods now are coming with sort of like a hook on the center column, on the bottom of the center column, that, you know, allows you just to, hang your gadget bag or whatever it might be from that hook. Very good advice.
And you know what? After the meetup number 4 that we did at Coogee Beach a couple of weeks ago, I thought to myself, why didn't I bring just some of those plastic shopping bags from Woolies? Because I could have filled them up with sand and used them as sandbags to, you know, keep the lighting stands that the umbrellas were on from falling over. Because I did have one instance where a slight gust of wind, even though it was early in the morning, came along, got behind the umbrella, and it nosedived into the sand. Now, thankfully, it didn't do any damage. You know, it was just a bit of sand over the umbrella. But I thought, you know, if I'd brought some plastic bags along at the very least, I could have, you know, filled them up with sand off the beach and just plonked them over the legs or over the center part of the lighting stand, just to give it the weight to hold it there against the wind and things like that. So you could do the same thing with a tripod.
You can. And I always keep a plastic bag if I can in my gadget bag anyway. If while you've got the camera on a tripod, starts to rain, over she goes.
Nice.
And what do they weigh? They weigh nothing.
Exactly.
You just pack them somewhere in some secret little pocket of your gadget bag. You won't even know it's there until, aha!
I need it.
I need that, yes. I might just go and pull that thing out. So, yeah, a very good idea. Like you said, you'd think, oh, well, you put the camera on the tripod and away you go. If you're someone who uses a tripod a lot, these 7 tips are really going to go a long way in making the use of the tripod easier, the purchase of the tripod a better choice, and, you know, the photographs that result more, properly and easily obtained.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, mate. Anything else we're going to cover this week?
Can anybody help me pack? I'm starting to get a little... I got to be on a plane at 9 in the morning, and so I'll probably have to leave here at about 7.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And head north to sunny Queensland, where it's beautiful one day and or perfect one day and beautiful the next. How do they call that? I don't know. tired, but yes, apart from that, no, I can't think of anything, but I imagine I'll have a lot to say for next week's podcast.
Cool.
But interesting things that I learn, when I do workshops, either techniques that I pick myself up on, or what I find interesting running photography workshops is learning what it is that people, or the problems that people encounter that we have to help them overcome. So may have a few more of those up my sleeve in the next edition of Shutters Inc.
Fantastic. Actually, there is one more thing that I do want to mention, and that is I've finally mastered the technology. We now have a common email address. So please, everybody, take note of this email address. theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com. If you send any email to that address, both Shelton and I will each receive a copy of the email. So don't ask me why it took me this long to work it out, but it did, and it's now sorted. And
a good idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least that way we both have a copy of the email and we know what each other's talking about. So
yep, that's right. The boys at Shutters Inc.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com. Yep, fantastic.
Cool.
Good idea, Bruce.
it was a good idea 3 years ago.
Mate, I can't pick on you because I didn't have the idea. So, well done.
Yeah, thank you, mate. All right, well, you enjoy your week and all your crazy travels. And we'll speak with you next week, I guess.
Be careful what you wish for. You might just... get it.
All right, mate. Talk to you then.
You bet. Good night, mate.
See ya.
This has been another AudioToYou.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@AudioToYou.com.